I sat in an observatory just off the bridge with Warshaw and Franks, a high-powered conclave. With our field ranks in effect, I now had the rank of Lieutenant General. Thanks to his visit to Brocious, Warshaw was an admiral. Franks was a rear admiral. Franks leaned forward in his chair, excitedly scanning the scene through the panoramic viewport. We had broadcasted in 35 million miles from the dry docks, far enough away to give our broadcast generator time to recharge in case the UA had ships patrolling the area.
Doesn't matter where you go, it always looks the same out here.
Spoken like a Marine.
Not all the same?
Course not. We're in the Norma arm. The stars are more closely clustered here.
It doesn't look any different.
No, it wouldn't to you.
What is that supposed to mean?
You're an engineer. You spend your time in the belly of the ship taking equipment apart and making sure it works right. What do stars matter to an engineer? Too busy with your seals and readouts to care about space.
Get specced. What makes you think the dry docks are still in use?
Where would you go if you're going to build a fleet?
It's a long way from Earth. Hard to protect.
Who are they protecting it from? The aliens? The aliens go after planets, not satellites.
Franks looked down at his holographic display.
Gentlemen, and in your case, Harris, I use the term loosely, we have arrived.
I looked out through the viewport and saw nothing other than open space.
Have you ever been to the dry docks?
No. Have you?
I've been there.
Franks brought up a floating holographic display of the dry docks.
Begin to read from the dry docks facility. There's some kind of activity going on around it.
He flipped a switch that brought up a shoebox-sized virtual representation of the bridge.
Sound general quarters!
Have they spotted us?
Look, here and here. These three ships here, they're moored outside the dry docks. That means they're operational. At the very least, they've been out for a test flight.
He turned back to his virtual bridge.
Bring all weapon systems online. Relay all orders to B2 and B3.
For lack of better names, we currently referred to the captured battleships as B1, B2, and B3.
Do we even know if they're capital ships? Maybe they're just cargo. Do you think they pose a threat?
Better safe than sorry. If they're building a new fleet out here, then those are going to be ships from that fleet.
They could have come from the Norma Central fleet.
The Norma Central fleet is 1,000 light years away.
How far are the dry docks?
We're still about 1.5 million miles out.
Think they know we sounded general quarters?
They know. They went on high alert too. This is our chance to get a closer look at those ships. Who knows when we'll get another shot like this?
We can't risk a fight. Until we pick up more equipment, these ships are all we have.
Now they're sounding general quarters.
That's enough, Franks. Get us out of here.
We're safe. Hell, for all we know, they might not even have crews on those ships.
What if they do have men aboard?
Doesn't seem likely.
Who would have sounded general quarters?
Dry dock security could have triggered the alarms.
Why sound general quarters on empty ships?
It could be a bluff. They might be bluffing to make us think their ships have gone online. We don't even know if their spec and weapon systems are operational. For all we know, those ships are empty shells.
Franks contacted the virtual bridge.
What's their speed?
500, sir.
Franks, get us out of here.
We might not get another opportunity like this. They're only sending two ships out. That's three of us against two of them.
They'll be in firing range in 2 minutes. Looks to me like they're spoiling for a fight.
Here's a chance to see the new class in action. Do you really want to run?
Take us out of here.
Contact the other ships. Tell them to broadcast to Mogat Space.
We broadcasted in 100,000 miles above the Mogat homeworld, roughly half the distance between the Earth and its moon. What the Avatari had hoped to do to New Copenhagen and Terrano, they had already accomplished on this planet. They had captured the planet, saturated it with toxic gas, then baked it by expanding the nearby sun. The extinct sun loomed like a shadow orbited by a cinder of a planet.
Scan the area.
As my eyes took in the starry surroundings, I began seeing shadows of inert shapes. I saw hulls and wings, whole ships and partial ships outlined in light, floating in space, as sharp and as dead as fish in a jar of formaldehyde.
The area's clear, sir. Doesn't look like anyone's been out here in years, sir.
Well, General Harris, we have 12 crews and 400 ships to explore. You plan to join us?
I do. Have you ever been on a wreck before?
No. I hear it can get ugly.
It's pretty grim. Maybe you know the answer to this. I always wondered, what happens first when your ship gets smashed? Do you freeze, suffocate, or explode?
It's that bad?
Admiral, this tour will haunt you for the rest of your life.
We piled into transports, cramming the kettles beyond capacity with 120 men each, plus equipment. Unlike Marines, human crustaceans in their hardened combat armor, engineers wore soft shells, rubberized suits that were flame, chemical, and radiation retardant, but little else. Far from bulletproof, engineering armor wouldn't even protect them from an assailant with a mechanical pencil. As little more than an observer on this mission, I was issued softshell armor. By the time the transport doors closed, I already knew I hated engineering armor. I brought contraband on this mission. As the only Marine in a flock of sailors, I felt duty-bound to bring a weapon, a particle beam pistol. If Warshaw ever came on a mission with me, I'd allow him to bring a wrench, in the spirit of fairness. The sailors around me had to have been chatting on the interlink, but I was deaf to them. Reminding me that this was a naval mission, Warshaw refused to give me a command link, the bastard. He alone could listen in on every conversation and speak on private frequencies with whomever he liked. That left me in isolation. I stood in the tightly packed kettle alone with my thoughts.
They're away.
On the off chance that the UA sent a patrol through Mogat space, we sent our ships back to Terrano.
The battleships? Yes, the battleships. Harris, you said you entered one of these ships once. Is that really true, or were you just slinging shit?
The Mogat scuttled a ship in the Perseus arm. I went out to explore it.
How did you get in?
There was a gash on the bottom of the ship. We flew a 10-man sled in through one of the holes.
Did you try opening the docking bay doors?
Nope.
Did you have engineers with you?
Nope. Seals.
Seals.
They knew their stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Look, Harris, you mind going out with A-Team? It sounds like you have more experience finding your way around a wreck.
No problem.
A moment later, Warshaw's voice came over an open channel as he addressed every man on the transport.
We're opening the rear hatch. A-Team, prepare to launch.
The doors of the transport slid apart, revealing an open field of space and stars.
Okay, A-Team, move out.
That was my call. There were about 20 of us on the team. We walked down the ramp, the gravity becoming weaker the farther we got. Halfway down, I could have kicked off hard and flown into space. When the first man reached the bottom of the ramp, he held his motivator over his head and lifted off. Engineers use handheld motivators instead of attaching jetpacks to their armor. The device looked like a pair of binoculars with handlebars instead of a strap. Their thrust technology used non-combustible gas emissions instead of flames. When I switched on its power, my motivator lifted me from the ramp and into open space. Following the sailor before me, I banked around the stern of the transport. As we flew along the transport, the pilot switched on the runner lights along the hull, lighting the rust-colored skids and smooth steel underbelly of the sturdy bird. Each motivator had a row of knuckle-sized safety lights, blinking a ruby-red signal along their top. Our team leader hit some button, and a headlight appeared at the front of his motivator. He only flew about 50 feet ahead of me, but I could not see him, just the cone of his headlight. The men ahead of me lit lights on their motivators as well. We circled the wreck of a massive battleship, like a swarm of flies approaching a beached whale. The holes along the belly of the ship were large enough for us to fly through, but the bottom deck of the ship had imploded.
General Harris, sir?
My visor identified the man on the line as our team leader, contacting me on an open line.
What is it, Ensign?
Sir, do you know what kinds of weapons they used on this ship? I've never seen such extensive damage.
This is what happens when you get hit with your shields down.
Their shields were down? Why would they lower their shields in battle?
We lowered the shields for them. The Mogats used a centralized shielding technology that they broadcast to their fleet. Once our seals shut down the central shield generator, the ships were unprotected.
You were in on the Mogat invasion, sir?
Yeah, I was there. A lot of good men died. We lost a lot more men than we should have.
We flew across the battered underbelly of the battleship and up the port side. Men fanned out and inspected holes and burns along the face of the ship. Three decks up, the team leader found our doorway.
The outer lock of the docking bay is open.
Knowing that the end had come, some Mogats had piled into a transport to abandon ship. They almost made it to safety. The broken nose of the transport poked out of the docking bay hatch like a missile launching from a silo. The outer hatch of the docking bay had come down on the transport like a giant cleaver, slicing halfway through the kettle and crushing the rest into a bow-shaped heap. We flew in around the crushed transport. Small diodes embedded in my visor sent out a 15-foot shaft of light. Beyond that beam of light, blackness shrouded everything not illuminated by the beams from another man's helmet.
Move along. We have a job to do. Perryman, Miller, Ferris, see if you can open the locks. Goldberg, Lewis, figure out a way to sweep this place out. I need the runway clear.
By sweep, he meant for them to purge the transport. Until we found a way to open the inner doors of the atmospheric locks, we would not be able to enter the ship. A trio of beams played along the wall until they all centered on the same panel. Using small torches, three engineers cut away the panel and discarded it. Behind the panel, they found a small lever, which one of them pumped up and down as if using a socket wrench. After four or five twists, the door pinning down the transport lifted toward the ceiling, rocking the injured transport as the hatch rose from the kettle.
How can it still have power?
Emergency hydraulics.
Three engineers placed charges along the rear of the transport. The wreck rolled into space.
That was easy.
Getting rid of that transport was the only thing that came easily. The other emergency controls were all on the inner sides of each hatch, meaning our engineers needed to cut through each of the locks, then open the way for the rest of us. It took Warshaw's engineers most of an hour to untangle the first lock, but they learned as they went. The next lock only took 10 minutes. We entered the enormous, blackened cavern of the landing bay. Men in overalls hung suspended just off the ground, their limbs so stiff and brittle they might have been made of glass. I spotted a man whose face hung from his head like a flap of skin on a badly stubbed toe.
Oh, good God!
Get used to it, Ensign. Everybody on this ship is going to look like that. Are you planning on bringing our transport inside the dock?
Yes, sir.
In the blackness of the runway, the transport's runner lights showed crystal white, bleaching everything they shone on. With the ship destroyed and no power for the runway sleds, our pilot had to fly the transport all the way in a slow and testing process. The transport finally touched down.
Okay, men, you have your assignments. Let's get this ship finished quickly.
The rear of the kettle opened and a swarm of technicians slid out, carrying toolboxes and meters and equipment I could not have identified. I spotted Warshaw gliding down the ramp. He moved with the ease of a man who has logged time in zero-gravity situations. I did not use my motivator to fly through the halls. I kicked off surfaces and redirected my momentum by pushing off the walls. Warshaw and his men had tasks to accomplish on this ship. For now, I was little more than a tourist come to see the grisly sights. I traveled through officer country, across a rec room, and finally down toward the lower decks. When I reached the engineering sections, I spotted Warshaw and his men gathering around the broadcast generator, a group of 18 bullet-shaped cylinders that stood 30 feet tall.
Looks like it's in solid condition.
Nah, this one's a complete bust.
The cylinders look fine.
Yeah, well, they would look perfectly sound to a Marine. They're big, unbreakable, and made of metal. It's the rigging on top that takes all the damage.
How about the broadcast computer?
Warshaw did not answer for several seconds, but I knew better than to repeat the question. I waited. He put a finger over the part of his helmet that covered his ears, and I realized he wasn't ignoring me. He was receiving a message.
Harris, the team on the bridge has spotted incoming battleships.
Franks must be in a hurry. He's not due back for...
UA battleships, the ones we spotted by the dry docks.
Shit. Maybe it's some kind of routine patrol.
Who knows what they have on those ships? They probably read the data off of our computers before we broadcast it out.
Warshaw and I headed to the bridge together, flying through the dark corridors as quickly as we could. Flying up an elevator shaft, we made our way to the bridge. In a working ship, it would have taken 10 minutes to sprint from engineering to the bridge. Floating weightless in this ghost ship, we made the trip in less than 5.
Have all of the transports docked?
You shitting me? 3 of them are stocked away. The other 9 are playing possum.
In a graveyard like this, with 400 capital ships, turning off your engines and letting your transport float would leave you all but invisible. 2 men dressed in the red armor of weapons techs met us at the command area. They spoke on a direct frequency. Without a word of explanation, Warshaw headed toward one of the off-bridge conference rooms. I had no idea whether I should follow him or not. I trailed after him, feeling more isolated by the minute. The oblong room had a table and a viewport with a panoramic view of utter blackness. I went to the viewport and stared into the void outside, the light from my visor forming bright spots on the glass.
Harris, kill the light in your visor.
I see one.
I could not see the ship itself, just a gold-tinted luminescence that slowly hovered in our direction. As it glided toward us, I recognized the knife blade shape of the hull. A general glow poured out of it, shining on the derelicts and debris as the battleship pushed past them. Warshaw and 2 of his men came for a look. The ship ambled closer, the glow from its hull lighting up everything it passed. The battleship floated by a defunct MOGAT ship. In the gold glow, I saw scars along the dead ship's sides. The hole in the bridge was so large, a skilled pilot could have steered a transport through it. I noticed something about the glow around that battleship as it approached. It was like a skin.
Admiral, Warshaw.
Not now, Harris.
This was a new technology. The ships I had served on had projected shields that formed an invisible box around the ship. I chanced a quick glance back at Warshaw and saw that he had spread some kind of chart across the conference table. He and four of his men stood huddled together over the table, Warshaw pointing to a spot above the chart. As a ranking officer, I belonged in their conference. I looked back at the oncoming battleship, then went over to the table. At first, I thought it must be a joke. The map or chart Warshaw had spread was blank, just a square of plasticized cloth with no marks at all. It took me a moment to understand. The cloth projected a virtual display that Warshaw and his techs saw through their visors.
Warshaw, there is a second battleship out there.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I'm also tracking a third ship coming in at about 5 o'clock. Now, if you don't mind, Harris, I'm busy at the moment.
The first battleship came closer, cutting through the empty space with the confidence of a shark gliding through open waters. I studied the way its shields adhered around it like a second skin, as if the ship had been dipped and coated in glowing plastic. I looked back toward Warshaw and saw him pointing at invisible details above that mat. Was it a map? A schematic? I should have been in on the planning.
General, would you like to join us?
They have new technology in their shields.
Yes, I suspect they do.
It looks like it's based on Avatari technology.
What kind of technology?
The technology the aliens used.
I wasn't aware that the aliens used ships.
They didn't, but they lent the technology to the Mogats.
The Mogats use alien technology in their shields? That explains a lot. We found disabled shield generators on almost every ship we boarded. A few of the ships didn't have any shield systems at all.
That's because they used a central generator that the aliens gave them.
Do you think the aliens might have given a similar generator to the Unified Authority?
I think the Navy may have deciphered their technology. Lord knows they have enough scientists trying to work it out. If they do have it worked out, we're screwed.
We're gonna find out. In 15 minutes, we're gonna open fire on those ships.
A three-dimensional map of the area appeared in the air above the table. The hulls of 12 ships appeared in red, surrounded by the hulls of another 300 ships in green.
The red ships are the ones we boarded.
I thought we had more teams out.
Some of the teams have not been able to break into their ships. Judging by the way they're patrolling, the UA ships know where we are, but they have no idea where we're hiding. One of them bumped into a transport without scanning it.
How is the transport?
The pilot is shook up, but...
No, how is the transport itself?
The pilot didn't report any problems. What are you getting at, Harris?
Just curious.
The shields the Mogats used absorbed energy. If a Mogat ship bumped a transport, its shields would have drained the transport's batteries.
My teams have found functional weapon systems on 7 of the ships.
As Warshaw said this, the display darkened as 5 of the red ships turned a swampy blue. The 7 remaining red ships formed a misshapen ring. I pictured the landscape in my head. If I had it right, the ships the UA sent to chase us down had passed right through that ring. Assuming Warshaw's men could get those weapons systems up and running, they could incinerate those ships the next time they passed through.
How can these wrecks have working weapons systems?
Functional, not working. We've isolated the weapon systems from the rest of the ship and supplied our own power.
What about shields? Can you get them working?
Sounds like those UA battleships make you nervous.
What do you have, lasers and torpedoes?
Just lasers.
No torpedoes. What if you can't get through their shields?
Then we're dead. We're as good as dead if we don't find a way to get rid of those ships before Franks comes back.
I never claimed to understand the naval approach to combat. For some reason that defied all logic, Warshaw insisted on pulling the trigger from the bridge. On a working ship with operational systems, that would have made sense. On this derelict, he sat in a pitch-black chamber filled with lifeless computers, broken systems, and an audience of stiffs. I remained on the off-bridge observation deck, watching the battlefield through the viewport. In the distance, I caught brief glimpses of light, nothing more than a streak here and there. Fighting this battle no more aggressively than a spider tending a web, we could not hit those UA battleships until they entered our trap. Staring out the viewport and seeing nothing but darkness, I gave up on the Warshaw plan. We were in a life and death battle, and he wanted to fight it like a specking engineer, relying on antiquated weapons and enemies blundering into his trap. 5 minutes ticked by before any of the battleships appeared again. I waited alone in that blasted conference room in the stark gloom. The light of one battleship appeared in the extreme corner of the viewport. The big ship was so far away that its light might have been the signature of a firefly. A second battleship appeared, loosely shadowing the first.
The third one would have to be nearby, guarding their flank. Another 8 minutes passed as the battleships slowly meandered into range.
What if only two of them come in range? Are you going to take the shot?
Take the shot? Is that Marine lingo? There are three UA ships out there. We won't accomplish our objective by only sinking two of them.
Franks is going to broadcast into the area in less than 30 minutes. This may be the last time any of those ships stumble into your shooting gallery.
Stay out of this, Harris. This is not a friendly game of bullets and grenades. Battlefield tactics don't work out here.
Taking out one of those birds may just even the odds for Franks.
Bullshit, Harris! If Franks comes in unprepared, they'll use him for target practice.
Warshaw signed off as one of the UA ships swished past my viewport. I checked the time. 21:49. Just 11 minutes, and Franks would fly in to rendezvous. I dropped down two decks, skirted a badly damaged corridor along the outer edge of the ship, and found an inner corridor leading toward the rear of the ship. Lights flickered inside one of the hatches as I passed. I peered in and saw some of Warshaw's men removing a panel from a wall. They ran cables from a jeep-sized crate into the circuits they had uncovered. I did not have time to worry about weapons systems, though I would die in the next few minutes if Warshaw's men could not get the weapons systems working. My plan hinged on my finding a pilot for the transport. I entered the docking bay, not sure whether the man piloting our transport had remained in his bird. Someone had pivoted the transport around so that its nose pointed out toward space. The rear doors sat wide open, revealing an empty kettle, the gravity off. I launched myself up the ramp, paused just long enough to seal the rear hatch, then kicked off the floor to the cockpit, not bothering with the ladder. For one cold moment, I thought that the cockpit was empty. But then a man in pilot gear hovered over to meet me.
Now what are you doing here?
Staring into the pilot's face, I switched on the edge lighting around my visor, hoping to blind him. Then, bracing my knee under a bolted down chair so that I had some purchase, I grabbed the man and slung him across the cockpit. He landed in his pilot's chair.
Hey!
I whipped out my particle beam pistol.
I want to go for a ride. Call for help and I'll fry you on the spot.
I was already too late.
Harris, what are you doing?
You miserable little prick.
Please, just...
Harris, get your ass up here.
I looked at the pilot.
Do you want to die now or take your chances?
Harris, I said get up here now.
The pilot must have thought my question was rhetorical. He did not answer.
Harris, what the speck do you think you're doing?
This is a marine operation, Admiral.
I turned my attention to the pilot.
Get us out of here.
We'll settle up, Harris. When this is over, you and I are going to settle up.
Warshaw's hands were tied. His engineers had opened the locks, but never brought them online. He could not shut the doors on me, and I was the only man on the ship with a gun. He had no way to stop the transport from leaving, and the terrified pilot was not going to put up a fight.
Where are we going?
Just take us out, fast.
There are battleships out there.
I know, I saw them.
But they're going to see us. They'll shoot us down.
If they want us, they're going to have to come and get us.
I tapped my pistol on the pilot's visor, and he lifted us off the deck and started down the runway. 21:53, 36 seconds. At 2200, Franks would arrive. That gave us 6 minutes until he broadcast with his shields down and his guns asleep.
Faster, asshole.
The pilot did not say anything, but the transport picked up speed. 21:54. We slipped through the locks, one after another. As we broke into open space, the pilot flipped a switch to shut off the runner lights.
Leave them on.
Are you out of it?
I swatted his soft shell helmet with my pistol.
Does this bird have any more lights?
No, sir.
I could see the shapes of the wrecks against the stars, but they meant nothing to me. With no other choice, I called Warshaw over the interlink.
Harris, what the hell are you doing? If you give away our position,
I'm not giving away your position, dipshit. I'm giving away my position.
You won't be able to outrun those ships if they spot you.
I don't want to outrun them.
Harris, you don't have any guns.
But you do.
I did not authorize.
Yeah, can we discuss that later?
21, 54, 51 seconds.
Where do you want the damn ship?
You're 35 miles out of position.
Things went quiet. At first, I thought he had abandoned me. Then I realized he was explaining the lay of the land to my pilot. As I waited for him to come back, the glowing figure of a battleship came around a hull and filled our windshield.
Oh, shit.
My pilot swung the transport into a 45-degree rotation that pointed us toward a narrow passage between two wrecks and hit the boosters.
You probably should strap in, sir.
As I struggled to pull myself into the chair, the pilot did me a kindness. He switched on the gravity generator. I was able to sit down and buckle myself in.
Watch out.
I pointed toward the ship.
There's another one behind us.
The beam of a searchlight rolled along the alley ahead of us, questing to touch us, lighting the dark hulls of the ships wrecked long ago. Fortunately for us, radar would do no good in this floating junkyard. They would need to spot us to shoot us.
Hold on, sir.
The nose of the transport dropped, and the entire ship seemed to somersault over itself. Suddenly, we were rocketing in a completely new direction. For a moment, I saw nothing but stars, but then a glowing hull slid into view. The pilot cut a sharp right and took us behind another wreck.
Oh, what I'd give for a torpedo.
You wouldn't want to do that, sir. Some of these wrecks are unstable.
How unstable?
That's why they haven't fired on us yet. They don't want to trigger a chain reaction.
Warshaw? Warshaw, goddammit, where are you?
Where did we go, sir?
I don't know. Warshaw set up a trap, but I have no idea where it is.
The pilot did not answer me. Maybe he had given up, too. Seconds ticked by. Then, with an abrupt change of direction, we headed into a narrow gap between two ships.
Are we headed toward the trap?
It's the other way, but we don't have any choice. They cut us off.
21, 55, 28 seconds. If Franks came back in on time, he would arrive in less than 5 minutes.
You better get us there quick.
They got us hemmed in on every side, sir.
Just get us there.
As long as we stay close to the big wrecks, they aren't going to shoot. They aren't going to shoot.
As we snaked our way between the demolished wreckage of the MOGAT fleet, a UA battleship closed in beside us. For a brief moment, it was no more than 1,000 yards away. And it kept its distance, like a cat waiting for a mouse to leave its hole.
We have to get across there.
I looked at the empty stretch ahead, knowing that we would be an easy target the moment we entered it.
Cut your engines.
What?
Cut your engines and put up your shield.
The wing of a dead capital ship stretched out just at the edge of my vision.
We'll hit that ship.
Yeah, it's called the element of surprise.
Plowing into that wrecked shield first could set off an explosion.
You see any other options?
Hold on tight, sir.
The transport did not slow when the pilot cut its thrusters. It slid forward at that same speed. I braced myself in my seat, helpless, as we drifted toward the wreck. We came in at an angle, skimming off the giant wing like a stone skipping water. The collision did not rebound us in the direction we wanted to go, but at least the ricochet sent us in a different direction than the big battleship. Leaning into the windshield, I watched the glowing, shielded hull of the battleship as it drifted away. Fast and large and flying in a frictionless field, the UA ship was unable to turn sharply and follow us. Instead, it fired its particle beam cannons at us. One of the green beams missed us entirely. The other glanced off the shields around the cockpit.
Do you know where we need to go?
Yes, sir.
So get us there.
There's no cover in that direction.
Something solid, probably a torpedo, struck us hard along our back. The pilot hit the engines, using one set of boosters to stop our spin and another to launch us in what I hoped was the right direction.
Is that where we want to go?
Not quite there.
Two glowing UA battleships circled us at a leisurely pace, like vultures waiting for their meal. They had all the time in the world. We were small, slow, and unarmed. 21, 57, 10 seconds.
Please tell me we are headed in the right direction.
Warshaw answered the question. The first laser flared out like a spear, striking the battleship head-on. The steady stream of silvery red laser fire lashed at the UA ship's bow, striking just below the top deck. The second of the Unified Authority battleships charged in, heading toward the source of the attack. As it did, another ship fired its lasers. The shields around both UA ships flashed brighter and brighter as the second battleship tried to return fire. Then the third battleship entered the shooting gallery.
All ships, open fire!
The light from the shields grew brighter and brighter. From where I sat, it looked as if the scene were happening in daylight instead of deep space. The shields around one of the UA ships began to fail, allowing our lasers to strike the unprotected hull. The ship took damage. Bubbles appeared along its bow. The bubbles punctured the outer walls of the ship, and flames appeared.
One down!
The guns on the second ship fell silent as its shield failed. The side of the ship bubbled, then burst. The shield around the third ship changed color from honey gold to a sickly green, and suddenly the ship seemed impervious to our lasers. Pinpricks of light appeared around the hull, tiny little flashes, as if someone had lit up little electrodes in sequence.
What is...
They're firing torpedoes!
The crew of that final Unified Authority battleship did not need to aim. They just trained their torpedoes along the laser beams. The derelicts were massive, but brittle and unprotected. One moment, we had seven ships spinning a laser web around the last UA battleship. Then there were only three. The UA battleship fired off a second fusillade of torpedoes. Then it exploded. Franks had arrived. His three battleships flew in tight formation, cutting across the graveyard like eagles coming in for the kill. But there was nothing left to kill.
I thought you came here to collect equipment, not fight a war.
The clock in my visor said the time was 21:59, 57 seconds. Brigadier General Kelly Tomer sat slumped in his chair, his arms dangling over the sides, his breakfast barely touched. Are you planning on eating those eggs or hatching them?
Oh, yeah. How'd it go with the MOGAT fleet?
We ran into UA battleships.
Ah, that's good.
No, that's bad. Live ships. They chased us into the MOGAT graveyard.
Oh. You know, when you found out you were a clone, did it bother you that you never had a family? I mean, I'm kind of grieving my parents like they died or something.
Why in God's name are you grieving for people who never existed?
Yeah, but I didn't know that they didn't exist, and now I do. It's kind of like they died a second time. See what I mean?
Well, I'm sure they would have been really excellent parents had they ever existed and had they not died. Tomer just sat there, staring over his ketchup-covered tray, his body gaunt, his arms nearly limp, his fork hanging off his plate. He had the kind of slack expression I would expect to find on a person who had died in his sleep. Did I ever tell you about my friend Vince Lee? Tomer shook his head, but said nothing. I served with him on this very ship. He was one of the Little Man Seven, one of the seven Marines who survived the battle on Little Man. Vince came back from Little Man a hero. They promoted him from corporal to lieutenant and transferred him to the Grant. I lost touch with him for a couple of years after that. The next time I saw him, I was back on Little Man with Ray Freeman. So Vince turned up on Little Man, only he wasn't himself anymore. He'd gotten himself hooked on Falzud and figured out he was a clone, kind of like you. Things went from bad to worse after that. He started calling himself the King of Clones, and the next thing you know, he got all of the other clones on his ship hooked. Once he got everyone all good and looted, he told the whole crew they were clones, and nobody died from it. And that's where things hit rock bottom. Vince and his buddies killed all of the natural-borns on the Grant and declared independence.
What became of him?
I killed him. Tomer reacted no more strongly to this bit of information than he might have reacted to my telling him that temperatures were cold in space. Tomer, you need to get off Falzud.
Huh? Why?
You're turning into a specking zombie. You say that you haven't shot up for a while, but you're acting like you just dosed.
Maybe I did take it this morning.
We have a staff meeting. Only six officers attended the meeting. Gary Warshaw, Lilburn Franks, Perry Fahey, Kelly Tomer, Philo Hollingsworth, and me.
So Harris, I hear you got to command your own ship.
Fahey batted his shadow-dusted eyes at me. Fortunately, the lipstick and rouge had gone away.
Commanding a specking transport with a one-man crew. Was that a lifelong ambition? What did you call your crews? A marine operation? Slick, Harris.
You got a point you're trying to make.
You killed off the Marines you took to Terrano. You killed off half the sailors you took to the MOGAT fleet. What's next, Harris?
I told you it wasn't like that.
The spec it wasn't. I can't believe you're defending this asshole, Warshaw. Who's next, Harris? Are you gonna keep killing us off till you have the fleet to yourself?
I was in charge, Fahey.
You weren't in charge of that specking transport! That was General Harris's show, his marine operation. We lost 500 qualified techs because of this bastard. That's what happens when you treat a marine clone.
One more word, Fahey, and I will slam your ass in the brig so hard you'll be shitting cots and bars.
Stow it, Fahey. One more word out of you and I'll throw you in the brig myself.
Now what are you gonna do, Gary? Take away my command? Is that what you want? Are you out of your specking mind?
Senior Chief, you are relieved of command.
Gary! What are you doing? Are you taking his side?
I am relieving you of command and stripping you of your field rank. General Harris, would you have one of your Marines escort this man to the brig?
Aye. Hollingsworth, take this man to the brig. Hollingsworth rose from his seat and walked over to Fahey.
Senior Chief, I have orders to deliver you to the brig. Please come with me.
Idiots! You're all idiots!
Fahey allowed Hollingsworth to lead him out of the room without speaking another word.
It's about time somebody put him away.
I apologize, General Harris. I don't know how Fahey came up with that shit. When I told him about what happened, it never occurred to me that he would twist it like that.
Let's move on.
I'll start. We have several teams working around the clock on the GC fleet. We've identified 328 ships that look like they might have salvageable broadcast equipment. The other ships are so banged up, we've written them off.
Is that wise? I mean, we're gonna need all the gear we can get.
First, we go for the low-hanging fruits, Franks. We don't know how much time we have before the UA sends more ships to guard the area.
How's the work going?
We've landed teams on 125 ships. We tested the shield systems on one of the ships, but it was a complete wash. Harris, you said the signal for the shields came from the planet. Is there any chance we could reestablish it?
The planet is filled with shit gas.
Excuse me, did you say shit gas?
Bad stuff. Take my word for it. There's no point sending anyone down there. Even if the shield equipment didn't break, we'd never be able to get to it.
Okay, but what is shit gas?
Is that a scientific term or something you Marines came up with?
I didn't name this stuff.
Okay, it was just a thought. Without those shields, everyone we send out to the GC fleet will be vulnerable if the Unifieds return.
Can you retrofit the GC fleet broadcast equipment onto our ships?
That's the big question, isn't it? I don't see why not.
Have you landed crews on the UA battleships we shot down? We need to have a look at their technology.
That's probably a marine operation.
A marine operation?
We've surveyed those ships from the outside. The systems are out, but that doesn't mean everyone aboard them is dead.
Once our official business ended, Tomer returned to his quarters to rest, and our conclave dwindled to three: Warshaw, Franks, and me. As soon as the door closed behind Tomer, the dynamics of the meeting changed. Instead of two admirals and a general, our psychology seemed to revert to enlisted man status. Differences in branch and pay grade no longer mattered. We were Gary, Lil, and Wason.
What is going on with Tomer? I can't figure the guy out. One moment he's spaced out, next moment he's the only guy in the room with a clue what to do.
He's on Falzud.
Falzud? That's some serious shit. Why do you keep him around?
After New Copenhagen, he needed it.
I heard New Copenhagen was brutal.
You have about 30,000 New Copenhagen survivors in your fleet. Almost all of the clones who transferred in with me fought there.
Are they all on Falzud?
Not all of them, but a bunch. They handed it out like candy in Clone Town. It made us easier to control.
Clone Town? What the hell is Clone Town?
That's what they called the relocation camp.
You had thousands of clones living in a relocation camp called Clone Town? Why didn't they all have the death reflex and die? I mean, shit! What does it take to make those speckers realize they're clones?
It's just like the orphanages, Franks. Think about it. All those clones packed together, each of them believing they are the only natural born. It's the same goddamn thing.
Tomer knows.
Tomer knows what?
He knows he's a clone, asshole.
He can't know that or he'd be dead.
I heard that could happen. I heard there were drugs that would block the reflex. Falzud must be one of them.
He had a pretty good idea where he came from before he got hooked. I've known Tomer a long time. He always had his suspicions.
Speck! That's hard shit. I mean, God, who'd want to be a clone?
Warshaw stared at him. Even if he'd wanted to inform Franks that he too was a clone, Warshaw's neural programming would not permit him to do it. I'm trying to get him off the Falzud.
What happens to him if he quits? Can he still have the reflex?
Probably no. If he were going to have a reflex, he'd probably have had it when he dried out between lootings.
Poor bastard.
Harris, are you nervous about sweeping those battleships tomorrow?
Not really. There aren't going to be any survivors. You guys blew the hell out of those ships. No one could have survived that.
Well, if they sealed off some parts of the ship, those areas might have air and pressure.
What are they going to do about the specking cold?
What about reinforcements? What if they sent for help?
How would they call for reinforcements? They'd need a broadcast network.
The Mogats sent messages. I heard they set up spy stations in every arm.
They did, but they had to build them around their own private broadcast network. They had many broadcast engines that sent and received messages.
Maybe these ships have many broadcast engines too. You don't spec and know if they have many broadcast engines on their ships.
Maybe. But why would they have come in alone if they could have called for help? They would have called for backup.
They had newer, better ships. Those cocky pricks probably thought they could take us easy.
They probably did. You know, you and I are both in the shits, Warshaw. My second in command is a Falzud sinker, and yours is in the brig.
Faye? Don't you worry about his ass. I'll take care of him.
You told me that no Marine was fit to command a fleet. Do you remember that?
Something like that, yeah.
Engineering officers don't cut it either. When was the last time you heard about an engineer making admiral?
You son of a...
I'm not trying to take over. I don't believe either one of us is fit for command.
What are you saying, Harris?
I'm saying we both need to step down.
And get passed over for command?
You think Marines aren't fit to command because they don't understand naval operations.
Damn speckin' right they don't.
You're right, we don't. The problem is, engineers don't know shit about operations either. What this fleet needs is a bridge officer, not a wrench jockey.
You mean him?
Frank sat there, utterly shocked.
You're joking, right?
He's next in line.
Bullshit! I'm next in line, Harris! Admiral Brocious gave me this command!
That was how we left it. Warshaw running the fleet, and me commanding the Marines. Technically, I should have brought Hollingsworth on this mission, but I'd already sent him to run Fort Sebastian instead. I should have left Tomer as a liaison with fleet operations, but I thought some action would do him good. I sat in the cockpit with the pilot as he flew my team out. It was the same clone pilot I'd hijacked the last time I came out to the Mogat homeworld. The newly destroyed UA battleships did not resemble the wrecks around them. It wasn't just the difference in their shape and color. The Mogat ships were not just sunk, they were annihilated. Some had imploded hulls. Several decks had been entirely sheared away from one Mogat destroyer. The UA ships had gone dark, but they looked like they could be repaired.
I like the look of this ship a lot better now that it's dead.
Let's just hope it stays dead.
Light still shone through cracks in the battleship's hull. The batteries backing their emergency lighting might hold out for months.
I feel like I'm sneaking up on a sleeping bear.
A dead bear.
You better hope it's dead, sir.
We moved in slowly, our runner lights blazing on the hull. Toward the bow of the ship, about 100 yards back, we found the hatch to the docking bay and sent a team of technicians armed with laser torches. The process went slowly. The pilot opened the kettle doors. A couple of minutes later, 5 techs drifted into view. They spent 15 minutes evaluating the situation, then finally got to work. The laser-resistant outer wall of the ship cut slowly, but it did cut.
Do you have our shields up?
Do we need them up?
Luck specs the unprepared.
Outside, our techs stripped away the outer skin of the hatch, revealing a panel filled with rods and hydraulics. Once the shield covering was gone, the work went quickly. A few more cuts, and the outer hatch fell away from the ship.
It looks like we're in, sir.
The techs went ahead of us to clear the atmospheric locks. A few minutes later, we entered the runway at a crawl. Our runner lights revealed the signs of battle. The deck was cracked. 60 feet ahead of us, the doors of the next lock hung askew. Beyond the broken hatch, a lightning-colored bouquet flashed over the top of a shorted-out electrical panel.
Looks like you're on your own from here, sir.
Looks that way. Okay, Tomer, lead them out.
Everybody out! Hit the deck and fall in!
As I left the cockpit, I saw the last of the men floating down the ramp. Offloading and forming ranks took longer in zero gravity. I looked over the ranks. The 100 armor-wearing Marines were a sight for sore eyes.
Listen up. The fleet sent us here to look for survivors. It's probably a waste of time, but that is why we are here. Search each deck for heat signatures. If you find something, report back before going in to investigate. I repeat, if you find somebody with a pulse and a face, call for backup.
Tomer sent the men out in fire teams, 4-man units that made a lot more sense in other situations. Fire teams were supposed to include a rifleman, an automatic rifleman, a grenadier, and a team leader. In this situation, everyone carried a particle beam pistol. We threaded through the broken second lock and found the third lock fully open. By the time we reached that final lock, we were walking along the deck.
General, the gravity generator is still online. Tell your men to stay alert.
Because of the darkness, our combat visors defaulted to night-for-day lenses, but we would also need to use heat vision in order to search for survivors. It would not be hard to locate heat on this busted scow. The ambient temperature had dropped to absolute zero. I switched to heat vision and saw that the men in front of me radiated red with an orange halo against the cobalt world around them. Normally, men in combat armor did not give off a heat signature. They did in space. The fire teams spread out quickly. 8 teams headed toward the lower decks, where we would have found engineering and the Marines on other ships. Who knew what they would find with this new design? I commandeered a team and headed toward the bow of the ship. I entered a hall and quickly located a stairwell that would take us to any deck. The stairs were wide enough for 5 men to climb abreast. 2 flights up, I paused to check the lay of the land, switching to heat vision as I looked down a hallway lined with sealed hatches. 4 of the hatches showed dark orange. There was heat behind those doors. 5th hatch had not been sealed. Blades of yellow and red danced outside that doorway. I switched to my tactical lens and watched the flames. Whether it was oxygen or some other gas, something leaking from that room was fueling the fire. I marked the rooms with a virtual beacon, which I sent to Tomer.
I have some interesting prospects up here.
I'll send a team by.
I led my fire team up two more flights and surveyed the next deck. It looked exactly like the same scene one deck down, sans the flames. Almost all of the doors radiated heat, but the hall itself was as cold as space. None of the hatches on the sixth deck radiated heat. We located the wound that had killed the ship, where the first lasers hit once the shields had given way. The seventh deck looked like a battlefield. We passed the frozen bodies of dozens of dead sailors right off the stairwell. The way to the bridge was an obstacle course, and we found at least 100 frozen dead in the various stations around the bridge. 15 crewmen lay in a huddle around the weapons section. I found the captain of the ship sprawled out on the floor near the front of the bridge. His skin was a glacier blue, and his eyes were open and frozen.
Did you see that, sir?
I had. It was just a fleeting glimpse, but I had seen a man in soft-shell armor slip through a doorway.
Tomer, I've got a contact. Seventh deck, just off the bridge. I repeat, we have a live one.
I switched to an open frequency.
There's been a change of plans, boys. There is life aboard this ship, and that means there may be traps. I want everyone to stay where you are until you receive further instructions. Do not engage. I will personally snap every finger off the first sorry spec who fires his gun on this ship.
What did you see?
One contact. He's dressed in soft shell.
Looking around the deck, I noted that the bridge looked like something from a nightmare. The computers, the chairs, the stations, all remained in perfect order, except for the dead men surrounding them.
Have your men reached the marine compound?
It's empty.
How empty?
No beds, no racks, no equipment.
No marines. Got anybody down in engineering?
A couple of teams.
Good. Tell them to shut down anything that looks like it still works. Don't smash things, just break them a little.
The gravity generator?
Gravity generators, life support systems. I don't want power going to any systems.
You said he was wearing armor.
I think so.
So he's got heat, light, and air.
That's not going to save him next time he needs to take a dump. He'll freeze his ass off.
There might have been only one survivor left on this ship, or there might have been hundreds. It didn't matter. Confronted with a shootout, they would be more likely to pull the proverbial pin than they would be if left alone and facing a slow death in space. People do heroic things in the face of fire, but when the end comes gradually, and their bodies betray them, and their only enemy is their own natural needs, heroism gives way to the instinct for survival. When we returned 24 hours later, boarding the derelict battleships was no longer a marine operation. All we needed were some engineers and a chaplain.
Harris, you son of a bitch! I demand you return my ships!
Naturalborns had become as interchangeable in my mind as clones. It didn't matter if it was Admiral Brocious, or General Smith, or Captain Pershing, or this guy, Rear Admiral Lower Half Hugo George, the man from whom I had commandeered our self-broadcasting fleet. They all sang the same angry song.
Sure, Admiral. I'll just give you back your three battleships and we'll call it even.
You speckin' pissant clone!
George, a young admiral at 45, rose to his feet. Just the two of us sat in the little interrogation room. Before coming to the Outer Bliss penal colony, I'd looked up George's record. He'd distinguished himself as a ship's captain fighting Mogats. His battleship destroyed more defenseless Mogat battleships than any other ship in the fleet, once we disabled their shields. Apparently, he knew when to attack and when to wait.
Sit down, Admiral. You're embarrassing yourself.
What I knew, what he did not know, was that over the last 3 weeks, Warshaw's engineers had attempted to install salvaged broadcast engines on several of our battleships. We flat out lost one ship when we tested it. God knows where it went. Two ships exploded. One ship survived the broadcast, but the electricity from the anomaly fried every wire, switch, and computer on the vessel. The electricity hadn't done the crew any favors either. We also had one mostly successful test. It did not go off without some flaws. The ship's shields and weapons systems shorted out. One of the engineers monitoring the broadcast engine died when an arc formed between the wrench in his right hand and one of the cylinders. Minor hiccups on the road to success.
Release me and my men!
You mean you haven't enjoyed your vacation in Outer Bliss?
I have no interest in holding you here any longer than I need to.
Then return my ships.
Nope.
Stealing my ships was an act of war, Harris.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do about it? The Navy sent half its self-broadcasting fleet to threaten us. We have 3 times as many battleships as they do, and our ships are Perseus-class design. The only boats they have that can reach us are GC Fleet vintage, 60-year-old ships. You don't really think they are going to attack us, do you?
Well, the pendulum swings both ways. You got the advantage now.
I'm glad you brought that up. When we do finally let you out of here, I was hoping you could deliver a message for me.
A message?
You know those next-generation battleships they're building at the Golan Dry Docks? We destroyed 3 of them.
You what?
Read 'em and weep. 3 of those new battleships against 3 GC Fleet antiques, manned by all clone crews, and we made a clean sweep of it. What do they call those new ships anyway? Around here we call them asshole-class ships, but I figure you probably have a better name for them.
You're lying. You're speckin' lying to me.
You know that I am not lying. Admiral George greeted my comment with silence. Finally, I stood up. Well, it looks like there's nothing more to say. I knocked on the door, and the guards opened it. Take him away. Admiral George left without a word. I think he was as glad to get away from me as I was to see him leave.
Wasted Harris, you evil sack of pus. You lied to that pathetic asshole. You let him think we took those ships head on. Now why would you do that?
Warshaw's disembodied voice came from the Kamehameha. He was monitoring my interrogations using the 2-way communications gear that the Corps of Engineers had built into the ceiling. We're going to send him home sooner or later. If we convince him the ships are no good, he might scare Brocious and Smith into giving us more time. You know Brocious and his fetish for house odds. If he thinks we beat his ships in a fair fight, he's going to scrap his plans until he's sure he's got the upper hand.
I don't imagine we'll be sending Admiral George home anytime soon.
Maybe not.
Think he bit?
Maybe. It shut him up.
He's a prick. I'm glad he's in the brig. Who do you have next?
Fahey.
You and Perry face to face? I'd pay big money to see that one. I have a case of Earthbrood that says one of you will not leave that room alive.
You're not sure which one of us?
I can hope, can't I?
Save your beer. There isn't going to be a fight.
No, Harris, I want that bet. Tell you what, I'll give you odds. You put up a 20 against a whole case. What's that, 5-1? 10-1? What do you say?
Just don't try to back out. Enter. In came Perry Fahey, recently demoted back to Senior Chief Petty Officer. Only now he was more of a pretty officer than a petty officer. He had on the customary eyeshadow, mascara, lipstick, rouge, and false eyelashes. He had let his hair grow beyond regulation. It was only touching his ears, but that was long by Navy standards. I pointed to the chair on the other side of the table, and the guards led him to it. Why don't you guys stay here for this one? Hello, Senior Chief. Looks like you are making the most of your stay here.
Get specked, Harris.
Well, it certainly looks as if you have done just that. I looked from Fahey to the 2 sailors, MPs, guarding him. They both looked away from me. I'm trying to decide what to do with you. I suppose I could leave you here till you rot, but I'm leaning toward other options. Send your ass back to Earth, or have you shot?
Put me back on active duty.
Do you expect to come back as a Senior Chief Petty Officer?
As an Admiral.
I don't think so.
Think about it, Harris. Who do you have that can run a fighter carrier? Who do you have commanding the Washington?
Tom Hampton comes to mind. He's a good man.
Hampton? You've got to be kidding me. Hampton can't fly a ship. The guy doesn't know his ass from the end of a hockey stick.
I don't suppose you have personal experience on that matter.
Get specked, asshole.
I thought you and Hampton were buddies.
Oh, I have a lot of friends, Harris. Believe me, I have friends.
I believe you. In fact, that is precisely why I came today. I've been looking over your record, Senior Chief. It says that you're only 26 years old, is that right?
What about it?
Well, that's awfully young to have made Senior Chief. You're 5 years younger than any other Senior Chief in the fleet. Did you know that? Impressive.
Like I said, I have friends.
Whom do you mean? Who are your friends? What about Warshaw? Are you and Warshaw friends?
Sure we are.
You were only promoted to Senior Chief just 3 weeks before I arrived. That makes you the least senior man of your pay grade in the fleet.
So? I'm good at what I do.
I bet you are. Once you were promoted to Senior Chief, who placed you on my command staff? Who placed you so high in the chain of command? Was it Warshaw?
Forget it, Harris.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Maybe not. So, I suppose we're done here.
I can help you.
How can you help me?
Warshaw promoted me.
Were you lovers?
Lovers. What we did had nothing to do with love. I touched my toes for him, if that's what you mean.
You piece of shit!
Warshaw?
You lying piece of shit! Harris, shoot that specking alive! No, don't shoot him! I want to come down there and kill him myself!
Sorry, Gary, I kept it quiet as long as I could.
That's a very serious accusation, Senior Chief.
Harris, you can't possibly believe that bullshit!
Take Senior Chief Fahey back to his cell.
Specking son of a bitch, liberator clone!
I met Fahey's eyes and grinned.
You let that backstabbing son of a bitch walk out alive?
I wanted my beer. We had a bet.
Don't believe a word he said, Harris.
The stuff about Hampton?
About me! It's all bullshit!
I'm not an expert in these areas, but as I understand it, there's generally a big, strong protector for every lipstick-wearing queen, and you do take your weightlifting...
Harris, I never...
Warshaw! You were still a Master Chief Petty Officer when he was promoted. You might have recommended him for the promotion, but you couldn't have approved it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
There's only one man who could have approved Fahey's promotion.
It wasn't Thorne. He had a woman on Terrano.
And when was the last time he got to see her?
That horny old bastard.
There were still pieces missing from the puzzle. Fahey knew more than he was letting on. I did not mention this to Warshaw. Just remember, you owe me a case of Earthbrood. I had one more debriefing to conduct, but it could wait, so I called it a day. I piloted my own small commuter plane back to the Norristown airport. By the time I reached Norristown, the sun had set, and lights sparkled all across the landscape. Before I could call it a night, I would have dinner with Ellery Doctorow, a formality I could not afford to ignore. However, the real reason I had come was to see Ava, of course. We had not spoken for weeks. I worried that she might have moved on. I climbed out of the plane and pulled my rucksack from the back. I walked toward the gate.
Harris! Over here!
Ellery Doctorow stepped into the headlight beams of his parked car, his silhouette nearly swallowed in the glare.
Harris!
I slung my rucksack to my left hand and waved with my right. I felt the bruising on my back first, and then my chest began to burn, and I realized the front of my blouse was wet. Doctorow came running through the gate. In the glare of the headlights, I saw Ava's outline, too. She came running after him. It didn't make sense. I could not have been shot.
Harris, don't move.
Wazen!
I'm not hurt. I propped myself up on my elbows.
You have to stay down, Harris.
I'm not hurt.
Captain, you are covered with blood.
Wason! Oh, damn! Oh, damn! Wason!
I'm not hurt. Then my former partner, Ray Freeman, strode up. He carried a sniper rifle with a smart scope in his left hand. Ava turned and saw Freeman's gigantic outline against the headlights.
Admiral Brocious says you broke the rules. He wanted me to give you his regards.
Seeing Freeman, Doctorow forgot all about me. He turned and stared, finally allowing me to sit up.
You shot me, you specking son of a bitch!
I assassinated you.
He turned and started to walk away. I sprang to my feet and followed.
Wason, what? Are you... what?
What in God's name is going on?
I ignored them and chased after Freeman.
You're delivering messages for Brocious now?
Just as I caught up to him, Freeman turned to look at me.
They're coming for you.
How much time do I have?
Freeman did not answer.
So that's it? Brocious sent you all the way to Terrano just to hit me with a specking simi?
Next time, it'll be a bullet.
Then he walked around a hangar. I saw taillights pull away. Then I climbed into the car with Doctorow and Ava.
Friendly fellow. Who exactly was he?
Freeman had hit me with simmunition, a kind of round specifically designed for faking assassinations. Instead of a slug, his cartridge housed a capsule designed to burst on contact and shower me with blood. Unfortunately, Freeman always used a high-velocity rifle. Simmunition or live round, any projectile coming at that speed would knock a strong man flat on his back. The round hit me hard enough to rip my blouse, and I was not anxious to see what else it had done.
His name is Ray Freeman.
You know him?
We used to be partners.
Partners, eh? I'm betting you did not run a dry cleaning service.
No, not a dry cleaning service. We did pretty much the same thing he's doing now.
Shooting people with blood bullets? Sounds like a fairly specialized niche. Did you get much business?
By that time, we had driven across the long stretch of destruction that separated the airstrip from the suburbs. The glow of streetlights replaced the starry sky. We drove past a school and a fire station. Light shone from the windows of both buildings. We drove into a neighborhood with stores and schools and trees.
Were you and Freeman friends?
Friends? I'm not sure Ray Freeman has ever considered anybody a friend. He doesn't have friends. Only people he trusts and people he does not trust.
Which are you?
I unzipped my ruck and pulled out a clean blouse. I'd only brought one change of uniform for the trip. Assuming nobody else shot me, and that Ava and I did not wrinkle the fabric later, I would be fine. He trusts me.
That's how he treats the people he trusts.
I'm still breathing. I knew that I needed to call this in. Franks needed to know that an enemy ship had run the blockade, and Warshaw needed to know that we'd been served fair warning. Freeman had said they were coming, but he did not say when. Maybe Brocious was bluffing, trying to get me to play by his rules. He would not come until he had a big enough force to settle the odds in his favor. I was almost sure of that.
Maybe we should go to the hospital.
Why? Are you hurt?
Your friend scares me.
Me too. What I don't get is why he's here in the first place. The government paid Freeman a lot of money to help liberate New Copenhagen. He doesn't need the money. Where are we?
We're almost there. My wife made dinner for us.
Your wife? How did your wife end up on Terrano?
Not exactly. I have a widow on Earth. Sarah is my wife on Terrano. We met after the alien attack.
You mean you have two wives?
Well, it's always possible that Tina has died or remarried. It's been several years since I've seen her, but she was alive and married to me the last time I checked. Technically, I suppose that makes me a polygamist.
Isn't polygamy a sin?
Only if God is watching and cares.
I slipped on my spare blouse and fastened the buttons. Turning to Ava, I smiled. See? Good as new. Ava brought up a finger, pointed at me, then poked it hard into my chest.
How can you stand living like this?
He wasn't trying to kill me. If Freeman wanted to kill me...
You'd already be dead. I had that feeling as well. How do you know he won't come back to finish the job next time? What did he mean when he said, you broke the rules?
Dr. O did not know about my plans. Ava had some idea, but she did not know about our stealing three self-broadcasting battleships. This was not the time to tell them.
It's a long story.
Ava, I'm afraid your boyfriend is keeping secrets from us.
About 10 minutes later, we entered Dr. O's house.
Whatever you do, Harris, don't tell Sarah about what happened at the airstrip. She's a bit on the delicate side. You wouldn't want to worry her. We're home, dear.
No need to shout, Al. I heard you coming up the driveway.
Sorry we're late, dear. Somebody assassinated Captain Harris as he came off his plane.
Should I remove his place from the table?
She came out of the kitchen and smiled at me.
Oh, General Harris, you're looking well for a man who was just assassinated.
Sarah Doctorow was considerably wider along the bottom than she was across the top, giving her body a pyramid shape. Her bottom was so wide it looked like she'd stuffed bed pillows inside her pants. She was less heavy around the stomach, and her girth continued to taper as it reached her notably flat chest and sunken shoulders. She had a lovely round face with laugh lines around the eyes and a little girl's smile. Her face was a patchwork of colors, with spruce-colored eyes, ruby-red lips that looked freshly painted, and cerulean makeup above her eyes. She wore her long red hair in a simple ponytail.
General Harris, you must be famished. I understand being shot takes a lot out of you. Ava, darling, why don't you come help me in the kitchen? You can tell me all about that awful assassination.
And just like that, Ava and Mrs. Doctorow vanished around the corner.
I had a word with Lieutenant Mars. He says a planet-wide media link will be up in the next week or two. We should be able to contact every city on Terrano.
Mars was the top dog in the Corps of Engineers. He commanded the crews that built Outer Bliss and refurbished Fort Sebastian.
Do you have working media stations?
No, but we should be able to throw something together. Perhaps you have some broadcast equipment you could loan us.
I'm sure we can find something.
Would you like a drink?
Got any juice?
Powdered milk and powdered juice. Fresh food is still in short supply.
I'll make it simple. Give me whatever you're drinking.
He poured me a tumbler, and I took it without looking to see what it was. We went out to the patio and sat in the languid night air.
They have the elevators working in the dorms.
Does that mean people are living on the upper floors now?
Are you kidding? It's hotter than blazes up there. We haven't got the air conditioning running yet.
We sat on some metal furniture and stared out across town for several seconds.
There's a nasty rumor going around these days that you are planning to start a war with the Unified Authority, General. Is that what Freeman meant by breaking the rules?
Something like that. Care to share how you heard about it?
It doesn't matter how I heard it.
It may not matter to you. To me, it's a breach of security. A bad one.
Do you plan on involving my planet in your war?
The war has already begun, but I didn't start it. The Unified Authority is phasing clones and obsolete fleets out of its military. They didn't send us here to free Terrano. They sent us here for target practice.
I don't know what to say. What happened? I mean, clones. They were the heart of the military.
A couple of generals blamed clones for all of the losses against the aliens.
There was always deep-seated prejudice among the officers I knew. I won't say it made sense, but it was always there. Always there.
Yeah, I know.
What did your friend mean when he said you broke the rules?
We captured three of their self-broadcasting ships.
Were those ships attacking you?
The Navy was using them to bring clones in and ship natural-borns back to Earth.
So, they came on a peaceful mission?
Yeah, I suppose so.
You fired on those ships?
Hell, we had to do something, or we would all be trapped right now. We hijacked, commandeered, three self-broadcasting battleships. Now, maybe we will be able to defend ourselves.
Have they asked for their ships back?
Yes.
Are you going to return them?
I can't imagine why I would.
It sounds to me like you've started yourself a war.
To us, it's a war. We're fighting for our survival. To them, it's a military exercise.
Just make sure you keep your war off my planet.
That's why we wanted the self-broadcasting ships. We want to take the fight to them.
What do you think they'll call your war back on Earth? The Clone Rebellion? The Clone Uprising?
I prefer the Enlisted Man's War. My men tend to keel over when they hear they're clones.
I don't want you pulling my planet into your war.
We have a 500-ship fleet orbiting this planet. The Earth fleet is down to somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 self-broadcasting ships.
40 ships that you know about.
We have a blockade around your planet. You and your people are safe.
Safe? Your friend with the rifle not only managed to run your blockade, he knew how to find you and put a bullet in your chest.
Simunition.
What?
He used simunition, not a live round.
You're missing my point, Harris. You weren't even able to protect yourself. You're in over your head. That's my point.
Sarah came out to the patio.
How are you boys getting on?
It appears General Harris here has plunged us into another war.
Well, that's fine then. Now you boys come in before our dinner gets cold.